Cool. Hi, Steve. Welcome to the Growth Mindset Podcast.
Thanks, Sam.
Where I interview interesting individuals about their life or the cool things that they're doing. Cool. And, or maybe the weird, terrible things they're doing, and just gain some insights about what I should not do with my life.
I hope I can help.
Yeah. So what terrible things do you do that I should never do?
That's a great leading question.
Yeah. Don't tell me anything about you. I don't care about that. Just
I'll tell you what. Stuff. One of my biggest problems with my last 10 years is I've tried to be a bit of a multitasker, jack of all trades. And I think it's really important to work out what you really want to do, and just focus on it. Just become really good at that. Don't try and be good at lots of different little things, because you'll only ever get to 85%. You're better off trying to get to 100% at the one thing that you're here on earth to do.
That's really useful, because I'm concentrating on many, many things, and yeah, not so good at that.
Well, it's good to be, you know, open to learning different things, yeah. But I think that you can take it way too far.
And, yeah, definitely.
And this is just my personal story.
Yeah.
And all the time I've spent doing lots of little different things in the last 10 years, I could have been focusing on songwriting, being a brilliant songwriter, a better songwriter. You know, maybe I would be much further ahead now.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a hard one when you're young. It can be quite good to focus on quite a few things just to find what you really enjoy and work out what your focus is. Because maybe if you'd focused on just songwriting when you were sort of 16, you might have really enjoyed it, but you could have regretted the other things that you're missing out on. But now you realize that you wouldn't want to do those other things anyway, so perhaps you're more able to.
Yeah, that's
hard
true.
To that's gauge true. In hindsight,
I might have been burnt out. I might have hit 25 and then I can't write anymore.
Or definitely, it's easy to look back now and be like, oh, if only I'd done songwriting since I was like 10, my life would be incredible.
Yeah,
but
you've got to have these experiences. You've got to go on these journeys. You know, a good friend of mine says you got to go to Brisbane to get to Melbourne, you know. That's if you're in Sydney. So it's you've got to go the wrong way to get to where you really want to go, is the message. And
that's cool.
And I like that, and it means that, you know, I'm older now. I'm 39 and I don't feel like I've really wasted time. I feel like I've got a lot of hope, because everything that has had to happen has happened, and it's brought me to the place now where I can realign my focus with a real sense of purpose and a real sense of knowing what I'm doing and why I'm doing it, as opposed to kind of like, oh, I really want to do this.
Oh, that's awesome. That's a great start. Really better than like just terrible things about you.
How terrible things, right?
No, we don't have to say that just yet. We could actually also talk about who you are.
Yeah.
Might make a bit more sense for the listener rather than just crazy, erratic, odd conversations.
Sure. I'm based in London. I'm a songwriter. My website is originalsongwriter.com. I've been making music since I was a teenager. It's taken me traveling. I love traveling. I've traveled a lot of places in the world. I recently shot a music video in Iceland, and it's just been put up on YouTube yesterday. So very excited about that. I'm a lover of lyrics. I love love. I love life. I love progress. I love quality food, wine, experiences, holidays and travel, and I like to draw on my personal experiences in songwriting.
Like a drawing a person. I was like, drawing on people's fun. Sorry, carry on.
yeah.
Just interrupt you there.
You're right. And I love writing, and I'm pretty sure I'm going to do it for the rest of my life. I'm in that place now where I've been doing life long enough to know what I want and how to go about doing it without burning out. And I'm here at this songwriters retreat this week because I like to immerse myself in different approaches to writing, different people who write. And I'm always trying to do something, even if I'm not writing a song, I'm trying to do something which is going to support the ultimate goal. You know, it might be earning money so that I can promote songs, or travel so I can work with other writers or publishers. So, you know, everything, it might be exercise so that I feel fit to sing in the studio. So everything I do, I try and go, well, how is this supporting your ultimate goal?
Wow, that's cool. Good focus, as we've already touched on. Yeah, I guess I always felt like songwriting was something I wanted to do, like a lot of, I kind of felt like I'd focus on it after I reached 30, really. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, I sort of felt like doing some other businessy things and other stuff. And I just didn't feel like it was something I could take seriously whilst young. Just sort of odd, because it's more of like the thing that people typically focus on when they're like 18, 20 and stuff.
Yeah, I think, I always thought that music, a lot of people just, they start out when they're a teenager because they want to pick up chicks and
Yeah.
They want to be on the road, and they want to be a rock star, and they want people to love them. They want attention.
Yeah.
And I thought, well, maybe once you kind of settle down and have a wife and kids, then the appeal of being a musician kind of wears off, because you don't need to pick up.
Yeah, yeah.
But you know, I'm long past all that. I'm still very much, music is a real part of my life. And I kind of wondered back when I was younger if it was just this phase I was going through. But now I'm 39, I realize, no, hang on, this is actually me. This is really me down to the deepest.
I think you'd be much more mature about it as well, and not go crazy and get distracted by drugs and everything else going on in the world.
True.
And
there are a lot of distractions out there.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
And it does seem like you have to be really lucky when you're younger, whereas when you're older, it's a bit more of a, you can kind of do it to enjoy and just be talented at it, and you generally have more of a network of the right people to work with, perhaps.
There's a big thing about being at peace with yourself.
Yeah.
I think if you are not at peace with yourself, then you are still searching, and that in itself can be a distraction, because you might be trying different things to find that peace. And I think it's good to kind of have the experience of knowing what you really want, and not knowing what's a distraction, and knowing what's being fruitful. Yeah.
Cool. Yeah. I really noticed the general, you seem really at peace. You just seem super chill and kind of happy to go with the flow if it's to do with songwriting. And
sure, mate, love it. Yeah. I just love it. I mean, it's weird, this retreat. It's not really what I expected.
Mm.
I won't go into detail, but I think that adapting to any situation is a good thing. In some situations, some people might go, oh, I quit, this is ridiculous.
Yeah,
you know, but there is value in every situation you find yourself in. You just got to extract that value. You've got to make it work for you.
Mm.
So my approach this week has been different to what I thought it'd be, but it's been really fruitful. I've written a couple of songs, wrote a song yesterday and a song this morning, I really, really like. I think they're good.
Yeah.
And, you know, I might be going, oh, I could have spent this week doing something much more productive or whatever, but you know, it only takes 10 minutes to write a song that could change your life.
Yeah.
So you're always in that place. It doesn't matter whether you're a place that you want to be or not, you know, you're always in a position where you can allow that to happen.
Cool.
So have a great week, man.
Yeah, and I like the song that lyrics that you wrote that I then adapted.
Yes. Musically. Sam wrote some music to my lyrics, which was great fun.
It was really nice.
Really lovely. Really lovely. Enjoyed that a lot.
Yeah. See if we can record that and stick it at the end of the podcast.
That'd be nice. Yeah. Cool. The finger picking, the guitar work that you do is really lovely, Sam. It's great. I wish I could play guitar like you. That'd be very nice.
I wish you could play for me, definitely. Play guitar in time. I wish I could sing like you even more. Jeez. That'd be good.
Yeah, I love singing. It's great.
Oh, me too. I just need to be good at it.
Yeah. Thing. So it's funny because we also ended up in the same collaboration group, three of us, another girl called Alison. And so for some reason, we've kind of kept ending up with each other's, working with each other all week, which has been cool. It's been really good, man. It's been good to get to know you.
Yeah, definitely. So one thing about you is you are in a cover band.
Take that. I am. I'm in a Take That tribute band. We're called the Take That Experience. The website's thetakethatexperience.co.uk. I play Howard. He's the dancer one. He's not one of the most popular, well-known members of Take That. But I like my role. I've been doing that job for 10 years. We do about 100 shows a year, and it's well paid, and I have a good team of people around us, and it's good. Off to a gig tonight, actually, in Bognor, so that should be good.
Wow.
And that's what keeps me out of a day job, definitely. Just gigging on weekends means that I don't have to work in an office during the weeks, and I've got time other stuff. I've got time to write, and I've got time to organize my life during the week and come to things like this.
Cool. So you just got like poached for that job because of your voice, or did you apply?
No, I auditioned. I saw a casting call online, auditioned, got the job.
Oh,
that was great. Really good. I was writing, I was doing a musical in LA about 10 years ago, and the budget for that show ran out, and I was sent back to London, and I had nothing on. I was just like, I was really devastated. My producer said, yeah, we're not going to keep going, and I was like, oh no. And then I applied for this Take That job, and that just kind of took over. The musical kicked back in again. We actually took it back and took it on stage in LA, and then did a two-week run in North Hollywood. So I was doing that both jobs at the same time, but in the last few years, the Take That thing's really taken over. This summer's crazy. I'm off to Norway next week. I was in Spain last week. Cool. So we do a lot of traveling, cruise ship work. And,
oh, nice.
Yeah, it's
do good. You any festivals and things? Or do they only want like the real Take That?
We do like, there's occasionally there'll be an outdoor festival for tributes.
Yeah.
Where they'll put like other tributes on. That'll be the whole concept.
That's awesome. So it's you get good. like a 60s version of a festival. But
it's great. There's one in Somerset called Summer Rock, which happens every August. We headlined that last year and that was amazing. There's photos of that on my Facebook page. Just like thousands of people. And it's great.
I totally want to go to one of those festivals.
Yeah, well, Summer Rock's I think the best one. There's another one called Glaston Budget, which I've never been to. We've not been invited to play that one, but I hear that one's pretty cool as well.
That's hilarious.
Yeah, there's a bit of a scene. It's
yeah, that'd be so good.
Tribute bands. I'm from Australia, and in Australia, at least when I was growing up, tribute bands weren't really much of a thing. I think Australians really got it, or they thought it was a bit cheesy. Yeah. But I applied for this job, this Take That. I auditioned for it. I didn't realize, I thought, oh, that'll be an all right job. Yeah, I'll do a few gigs here and there. Yeah. And I didn't realize in the UK, the tribute scene is massive.
It's pretty big.
It's enough to keep me, you know, employed. And as a member of a 5-boy band, it's great. We do a lot of shows. We work really hard. It's a lot of late nights and traveling, but I'm really, really lucky to have it. It's a job I didn't really know how much I'd love. And
I was going to ask, like, sort of, is that something that you'd ever aspired to do or something? It sounds like it just randomly came out of the air and happened to be perfect. And
I was always performing. I've been in bands and gigging, you know, all my life. So for me, this was about making money out of performing. Yeah. So that's why I went for it. It's repetitive, you know. There's a lot of boredom in doing the same stuff all the time. But it's been good for me.
You're changing your repertoire that much.
It's been good for me to learn to be kind of content with you know, instead of moving to the next thing all the time, you just perfect.
Well, I guess
what you do.
In the last 5 years, Take That have actually come back and released new albums. So has that been like pretty useful for you guys in terms of other stuff to do? And
when they're busy, we're busy. And they've really kicked back in. I think they've got a new album coming out this year. They'll be back touring again next year.
Cool, and you can go and hear the Take That tribute.
Yeah, we love it. It's really good to Take That experience. So come and check us out in a town near you, Bognor tonight.
That's so cool. So do you guys have like a high turnover of members? Because obviously anyone can just leave and get replaced because it doesn't have to be the actual person. Or do you guys are you pretty safe?
I think there's much less turnover than most bands.
Yeah.
It's a pretty stable group. I've been in it for nearly 10 years. Two of the other guys have been in it longer than me.
Yeah.
And so since I've joined, there's been two changes, Gary and Robbie. So it's...
of course.
Yeah, it's pretty stable, to be honest. So we all know each other very well. You know, it's some kind of weird, messed up marriage that we've got going
on. Yeah. That's what they say, all bands.
It's nice. We've got a great manager as well. His name's Paul. He's a great guy. He's been with it from the start, and he does a good job. Keeps us together.
Yeah, that's so cool. Right. So do you meet a lot of other tribute bands whilst you're going around and things?
Yeah, sometimes. I think the best tribute I've seen was a Pink tribute. Her name's Vicky Jackson.
Pink. Wow.
She was absolutely incredible. Just looked and sounded just like her. To be honest, there's some average tributes out there. So when you come across one that is incredibly impressive, check out Vicky Jackson. She is born to be a tribute. Maybe she's born to be Pink herself. I don't know. She's really good. She's brilliant.
Yeah, is it hard when you kind of can get so much stage sort of presence and crowd to come and listen to you when you're performing someone else's songs and then you want to perform your own and then it's hard to...
You know what? I do. I perform to, I think last year, maybe 100,000 people. And I'm thinking, wouldn't it be so great if I could have this audience for my music?
Yeah.
But that's not what it's meant for. I mean, I'm there to do a job. I'm there to give people a Take That experience. You know, that's what I'm paid to do.
Yeah.
So that has to be the focus. That has to be the reason. You know, there might be a little bit of crossover, like some people who've seen me at shows and follow me, they follow my original music as well, which is fantastic. So there's a certain platform for my own music, but I would never try and make myself the center of attention over and above what I'm there to do, because it wouldn't work. It's not meant to be that way. So I've got my own creative original music, which I keep running separately, and where they have the chance to cross over, great, but it's not my agenda to kind of force that upon boy band fans.
Sure.
It's different music anyway.
Okay. What would be your top tips for anyone who is in a band, whether a cover band or not, just for like keeping sane, going on tour and optimizing life, that kind of thing? Or common mistakes?
There's so many different ways to get down the mountain, isn't there?
Yeah.
I mean, you...
How do you do it? How do you, like, optimize it for yourself?
Well, one thing I did, I remember having this conversation with a few of my friends. I was in a band coming out of high school, and back then everyone's like, just go for it, just follow your dreams, just give it everything.
Mm.
And some people did, and some people didn't.
Yeah.
And I was one of the people that kind of didn't. I half did it. So the people that did, you know, a lot of them kind of ran out of money and ran out of steam, and that was a bit sad. But I kept both going. I went to uni. I got skills. I got a business degree. I started working in finance. So that gave me that kind of comfort buffer against requiring my music to feed me and for its success. And that worked for me. It really did. And now I haven't worked a normal job. I've been doing just music really since 2008. 2008, I was working in finance. I was temping, and then there was the crash. So yeah. I was one of the first to go. And that was the best thing ever. Since then, I wrote songs. I got into music. I wrote the musical. I got into the Take That tribute. And then I just started rebuilding my own solo career. So had the GFC not happened, I'd probably still be a city boy in an office in a tower somewhere, not doing what I'm meant to be doing.
Yeah.
So for me, it worked for me to get the skills, the business skills, because that gave me a buffer. And it's kept me going. And I'm glad that I don't have that pressure now that, you know, every song's got to make me my rent this week.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's me. But, you know, if Taylor Swift took my approach, she'd be a half not successful.
Yeah,
so for her, true. It's like, right, just do it, just go for your thing. So, you know, don't take my advice, take it with a pinch of salt, because it's not for everyone, you know.
Sure. Okay, but what about like day to day, what do you do? As in, do you always make sure you have the same thing for breakfast, or do you always work out, or what kind of like tips do you have for
day-to-day rituals?
Sane? Yeah,
I think compared to most people, I have a very varied life. I sleep in different beds all the time, because I've got two flats, one which I own, one which I rent in London off a friend, and I use them both for Airbnb. So
yeah.
I live in them when they're empty, and I rent them out when people pay the money.
Mm.
So I'm constantly traveling. Like I say, I'm Spain last week, Norway next week. I don't really get into many rituals except for living out of a suitcase. So I suppose that's the best ritual I can imagine, is living out of a suitcase. I'm constantly on the roads. And I suppose that actually keeps me healthy.
Yeah.
Because when I have like a 6-week block where I'm living in the same flat or something like that, I feel like I start to get a little bit habitual, lazy. I start to eat more. You know, it's like the paradox of choice. It's like having so much at your hand. It's being on your own schedule means, oh, okay, right, I'm going to eat now. All right, I'm going to eat now. But when I've got places to be, places to go, it disrupts your normal patterns. And I like that, because for me, a normal pattern is excess. It's consumption.
Yeah.
And I feel like whenever I don't have time for breakfast, or I don't have time for lunch, that's a good thing. You know, skip a meal here and there. It snaps you out of that consistency. So that works for me from a health point of view.
Yeah, definitely. You look very healthy you look quite young for 39. I was kind of surprised when you said.
Thanks, man. That's a good thing to hear.
Yeah.
I don't exercise much. I used to exercise more. Again, when you're traveling, because, you know, you burn calories when you sleep.
Yeah.
So when you carry your suitcase around, when you get on a plane, you know, when you get in a car, you go to a gig, you set up, you pack down, you know, you're burning a shitload of calories every day. So exercise kind of happens inherently, as long as you're not just in the same place. So I think travel is kind of like my exercise. And then when we get on the cruise ships, I like to go to the gym and get on the treadmill a bit.
Cool. Do you do any long stints on cruise ships, or do you kind of jump between them when you're on them?
We jump between. We do maximum 1 week per ship, which is good, because you kind of want to get off after a week. Living on a cruise ship would be difficult.
Yeah, my second cousin, she's been doing like working on cruise, like the Disney cruise ships, but she does like a 6-month stint on the same one.
Uh-huh.
And I don't know, it sounds kind of amazing, but also kind of horrible all at once. I feel. I can't tell.
I think it's good. It's a good thing to do for a season, you know. You travel the world, you meet lots of cool people, but as a lifestyle, I would find it really hard. Yeah.
Cool. Yeah, that was interesting. What would you say is your favorite Take That song?
From a songwriting perspective or performing it?
Both. I said one than the other.
Okay, so from a songwriting perspective, I think Rule the World is an incredible song. And I also think Greatest Day. These are just big, awesome tunes. Plus, there's a song called Let in the Sun, which was on their second to last album. You know that song?
Yeah.
This is the thing, because no one really knows it. It never really charted, but it's such a great, it's an epic tune. So, but then sadly, there's been a lot of tunes which I really dislike that Take That have put out in the last 10 years. So from a songwriting perspective, some of those ones, Patience, when they came back. Lyrically, Patience is an incredibly strong song. If you kind of just always sung along to Patience and enjoyed it as a song, great. But next time, focus on the lyrics, because it's really, really well done. Performing, I love Pray. It's got the kind of that just 90s cheesy boy band dance routine. And it just feels cool to dance it. So it's pretty good. And then they did a cover of How Deep Is Your Love, the Bee Gees song. And I love singing that one. It's got beautiful harmonies. It's just got swelling harmonies all over it. So
can you get away with doing the odd other cover that Take That haven't done? He felt like doing a different Bee Gees number one night. Could you maybe do one just for fun?
No. We always do what Take That have done. I mean, Take That covered the Beatles medley.
Cool.
And so we sometimes do the Beatles medley, but only because Take That did it.
Sure.
I think it's nice to have that rule. I think it's nice to go, you know, when you come to see Take That, there's going to be some connection to what they've done in the past.
Okay. What would you say has been the biggest challenge for you, aside from focus, in the last 30 years?
Biggest challenge?
The hardest thing you've ever done.
Relationships are tough. It's not a very settled lifestyle. So that's been a challenge. That's been something that's very difficult to master.
I found that really difficult when I'm constantly traveling and sort of living out of a suitcase for a year. It's sort of you start things like off like a spark, but then you kind of, it's not enough to sort of say, oh, okay, well, I'm just going to come and move in with you, or otherwise it's bye. So so you're kind of like stuck in between.
It's not conducive to the typical relationship. So I'd say that's probably been my biggest challenge. Yeah, without going into any more detail.
Yeah, no worries. Okay. What's your favorite question to ask people if you're sort of, because I guess you meet lots of new people and having the exact same conversation is kind of annoying. So what would be your favorite starter?
It's true. It gets annoying. Small talk, constant small talk. It does get really annoying. I don't really ask questions. I get asked the same questions all the time, but.
What's the favorite question that people ask you or?
Yeah, actually, it happened a few weeks ago. What was the question? I've probably forgotten it now. But some woman after a show, we do photos and stuff, and some woman asked me a question. I'm like, I never get asked that. Thank you. Sorry, I can't remember what the question was now. But it's nice. It would be nice just to see someone that you've never spoken to before. Just sit down and just get straight to it.
You know?
What? Tell me what your struggles are. Tell me what's interesting about you. Tell me what your life is all about.
It's kind of what I get to do on the podcast. It's really nice. So even if I've never met someone, I can go like super nosy straight away.
Yeah, I like that. Maybe I should do a podcast, or I should
just... Yeah, I bet you meet loads of cool people whilst you're traveling.
Yeah, just asking. I think asking deep questions to strangers doesn't usually work, but in the right forum, it does.
Mm.
So, yeah.
Yeah, well, like, it was interesting earlier just to sort of talk about Bitcoin.
Yeah, we've been chatting crypto, haven't we?
Yeah.
Cool. I like talking politics, actually.
Really?
If somebody starts me on religion or politics, I'm straight into it. I'm like, right, let's have a nice long chat about this.
Okay, well, maybe we don't have for a really long chat about politics. But what's your big thing right now then? Trump, Brexit, GDPR.
I think it's really good to be quite open. I don't like to identify myself as a lefty, a right, a conservative, a Republican.
Really, good article about that recently. It's kind of like supporting like a football team when actually 5 years later there's no one in the football team that's the same people anyway. Do you support that? And same with like politics, like they represent completely different set of views and opinions. So 5 years later and it's different people doing different things, like why do you just hang on to like the brand of this party just because of it's kind of what you associated with
it, and the actual substance of that party?
Yeah,
you know, unless you're in the inner circle, it's very difficult to work out. Here's the big problem with politics is the media. And the big problem with the media is they feed the appetite of the consumer, people like you and me. So basically, if our appetite is for clickbait, if our appetite is for a headline,
yeah,
the media are going to feed us that. And our appetite should be for things of much more substance.
Yeah.
Because when we educate ourselves, when we become knowledgeable about the real issues, about what goes on behind the scenes, we're not going to feed the media with these clicks, these meaningless clicks, which are a distraction. And I think that everyone should do their best to be educated about politics, because frankly it's so important to understand so that you can speak with authority on politics and you can vote with authority on politics, you know. Mm. Voting because you've been just hearing things from a certain source a certain way is a great way to help your country go down the wrong path.
Yeah.
So I'm a big fan of politics. It's like sport. It's like football. Okay, so I'm Australian. I was never into English football.
Mm.
And then eventually you live in England and you just get exposed to it. You see it on TV a bit. You read it in the papers. Friends talk about it. And all of a sudden, you start to understand. You get into it. And you watch a game. And you're like, oh, this is good. And then you watch a few more games. And then you hit this point, this tipping point where you're like, I love this. Mm. And you really get into it. And I became a Crystal Palace fan. And I love Crystal. Oh, I love watching Palace. And that went from a place of being nothing. A lot of people are in that place with politics where they just like, oh, whatever, I don't get it. If you actually try, you might learn a few things and then you might reach this point where it starts to fascinate you and you've got to turn on the news at 6 o'clock because you know what happens today and you've got to see, you know, what Michael Gove's talking about. And sure. And that makes the world a much more interesting place because there's so much politics out there, not just British, but, you know, globally, politics is fascinating. You know, it's an absolute treasure trove of tactics, of opinions being pushed and agendas being pushed and people falling for the tricks that these politicians employ. If you look up the definition of the word politics, I haven't done it for a while, but when I did, it was something like it's all about making yourself look good at the expense of someone else. That's the fundamental nature of politics.
Yeah.
And when you understand that and then you see why certain politicians say and do the things they do, you start to see what their agenda is and you start to see through the bullshit. And I love it. I love politics and I love kind of that sociology, religion stuff. Like I said, we could talk about it forever.
Yeah. I guess I get really frustrated by like politics and some sport in that I find it kind of a little bit helpless to be able to make much difference to it, and there's this constant stuff and there's always something going on that's annoying you, and I don't like talking about things that annoy me if I can't change them or control them.
Good point. And so politics,
I
feel like
if I constantly have discussions on politics, I'm just sort of wasting my time if I'm just coming to conclusions about something and like, let's all decide to support this, but then it doesn't make any difference, and so I'm like, I could spend my time doing something else.
Politics is not meant to please, it's meant to placate. It's kind of meant to annoy you because every single person here sits on a spectrum between rich and poor.
Yeah.
And, you know, if you're a rich person, you should expect that things aren't going to be perfect for you.
Mm-hmm.
If you're a poor person, you should expect that things aren't going to be perfect for you. It's about compromise. Yeah. There is compromise is inherent within politics. And I love the Westminster system. I love the British politics because it's always this, okay, so you've got your basic left and right, and they're quite central, you know, and they're quite right actually relative to the rest of the world. But the electorate, the voters will take a step in one direction and they'll go, okay, let's go over to the left a little bit here. And they'll try that out. And then there'll be a whole lot of people disenfranchised with that. So then we'll have another election and they'll go, okay, let's go over to the right a bit. And then everyone will be disenfranchised. Like, oh, we're going too Tory now. You know, let's go back to the left. And it's just this self-equilibrating continues to balance the interests of everybody. And I think that it's not as bad as a lot of people think. You know, people say, oh, this country's just run by the rich rich and the right wing and the Tories.
Oh, yeah, so much clickbait. And
whoever the next Labour leader is at the next election will be the next Prime Minister. I mean, it's not as bad as people say. You know, it's not... The people that can be represented and are represented, but they're not overrepresented in the sense that, you know, we're not going to go so far to the left where we realize that this is a massive mistake as well. We're not going to go so far to the right where we, you know, it self-equilibrates.
Hopefully. Yeah.
I think it does. I think history has shown that. And I think the further, I mean, America, look at Trump, you know, America's going quite far to the right.
Yeah.
If you take a big jump to the right, then it'll just be another big jump back to the left when you get there.
Yeah, yeah.
But it works. And I think this is why I love talking politics, because I actually value the system.
Mm.
You know, we British people are so prone to complaining. But I tell you what, if you were involved in a like a proper political, a country where there was huge amounts of corruption, like nothing we ever know, then you've got the right to complain.
Yeah,
those situations are really screwed up. So I like to see the good in politics. Yeah.
Okay, cool. What's the strongest memory you have from childhood?
I don't know. I mean, I grew up in Australia. I spent a lot of time on the beach. School. I went to a Christian school. So churches. I was very much brought up in the church. So I remember a lot of that. A specific instance or a specific time? I don't know.
Is there a memory of like something that you super messed up on and like everything went badly or?
I'm sure there's a good answer, but I hadn't prepared.
Did you ever get like kicked out of school for any reason? Or?
I was a pretty good kid. I enjoyed school. I liked to study and I liked to work. And I think I embarrassed myself a few times. I think naturally when I was younger, I was known as a bit of an egoist. I was a bit egotistical. So I think I embarrassed myself quite a lot by, you know, especially in front of girls. So there's a few instances, I suppose, but...
You could go for an embarrassing girl story.
Oh, look, nothing really haunts me. I suppose you just, everyone goes through that, don't they?
Yeah.
They kind of try and big themselves up and then they fall flat on their face and they get cut down to size. So I think that's great. I actually look back on that situation and I'm like, I kind of smile and laugh about it, even though it was incredibly like embarrassing and painful. You kind of smile and laugh. Yeah, this is what builds you.
Can you describe the situation?
It's just your typical situation. You know, you're out with a girl, you know, you're, she's awesome. You're trying to impress.
Yes.
And you think you're the dog's bollocks. You think you're the bee's knees, and you get shot down and you get rejected. And it's a little humiliating. So yeah, that kind of thing. Yeah.
Okay. Stop pushing then.
Yeah, sorry mate, no specifics.
I'll delete that question from the podcast.
Whatever.
What do you think you'll be doing in 5 years' time?
Writing songs.
Good.
Yeah.
What's the kindest thing anyone has ever done for you?
Kindest thing. My mother is a fabulous person. And I think the kindest thing she ever did for me was raise me. raise me and my sister. She put her heart and soul into our family. And it's not one single action. It's 20 years worth of love and dedication. So gotta say my mum, she's an absolute gem. She's brilliant. Dad too, actually. He's in a very different way. He's a very kind and beautiful person. My mum and dad clash, and so they should. They're so different, but you know, his way of showing love is very different. But I really admire him as well, definitely.
What do you or how does it work, your family dynamic, now that you're here? Do you still see them a lot?
I tend to go back every year to catch up with the family. My sister's got a few
Christmas
kids
and stuff, or is that like
New Year
busy time for you?
Usually gig in Christmas, New Year, so I'll go in January.
All right.
Yeah, so I'm back there, plus I got some really good friends there, some songwriting buddies as well.
Cool.
That I get to catch up with every time I'm back in Australia, so it's always good for collaborating. And yeah, I like to go home, go to the beach, get some sun.
What Well, do you have anything you want to ask me?
I really don't know that much about you, Sam. And I suppose it was when you first said, let's do a podcast. I'm like, how's that going to go? Because we don't know each other that well. So, yeah, I'd like to know, if I was interviewing you, what topics would really get you going? What are your two strongest passions, I suppose?
Yeah, well, I guess like why I started the Growth Mindset podcast is I hate waste. And I feel like people have so much potential if they kind of direct it their energy properly. So I love optimizing people for whatever it is they want to be doing and like helping them do awesome stuff. So I'm always, as soon as someone says they're starting a new project or they've got an idea, I'm always like, yeah, let's talk about the idea and like, how are you going to make this happen? So I'm always keen to help people do things. And then I kind of just like business, and which is sort of usually solving a problem somewhere in the world and optimizing something. So I'm, yeah, kind of just like doing lots also. Sport.
So businessy type things.
Yeah.
Like, and I'm looking over your shoulder, I saw you coding. Are you a coder?
Yes.
Ah, excellent. So is that a passion? Is that something you like doing?
Yeah, I've got quite into that. So I was coding an arbitrage bot for Bitcoin.
Sorry, I have no idea what I know what Bitcoin is, but what's
arbitrage is where you, let's say you can buy Bitcoin in one exchange at like £7,000. On another exchange, it might be £8,000.
Right.
Which is like, doesn't really happen anymore, but like on a much smaller scale, like 7,000 on one and like 7,010 another one. If you can sort of spot arbitrage opportunities of a mismatch between valuations, you can sell in one place and buy in the other.
Oh, wow.
And then like equalize when transfer back when they're equal. And so you just make money. You don't really have any risk in it. So
because you're just spotting price disparity between two different vendors. Yeah.
And it does happen a lot more in some of the more closed off exchanges, like in Korea and Brazil. So you can kind of use a base exchange somewhere and then find its opportunities. And so writing a bot to sort of scan all different cryptocurrency kind of pairs across the different exchanges to see what the prices are. And then when there is one that will be more than the fees it takes to actually transfer it, you kind of buy and you sell at the different places. And
fantastic. Yeah, fantastic.
It's kind of should be a money making machine, but who knows? It's obviously kind of complex.
Absolutely. That's fascinating, mate. So I imagine that you've been, in order to do stuff like that, you're probably quite good at coding.
I wouldn't say I'm amazing at coding. I learned to code like 2 years ago, and then I've been really good at 1 year and a half. I don't know, not that long, but I've been very good at like talking about what I'm doing and people be like, oh my God, you're great. We'll give you a job. And I've been like, I'm not good enough for this, but I kind of get someone else that is. And so I've basically been having really good people do all my work for me.
Outsourcing.
For the past sort of year and a half. And so it's been nice to actually do a project myself, which I've been doing with this bot. Cause I need to do a few things to kind of and actually take ownership of them a bit more rather than it getting hard and being like, oh, someone else can do it. And I kind of vaguely understand most of what's going on, but then.
Fascinating stuff.
Yeah.
Fascinating stuff. I'm a little bit jealous. I think that being able to code would be something incredibly useful for now and the future.
Yeah.
But
I got a bit of FOMO like a few years ago. I was kind of like, okay, I really just have to like suck it and do this and know that I'm going to sort of be terrible for 6 months and that I'm not going to make any money doing it, but just learn.
Just do it. You won't regret it. And I'm sure you're
exactly.
not.
Exactly.
That's the thing. Yeah. I think that I get that. When I went to school, we weren't taught how to touch type.
Right.
So when I was 26, I enrolled myself in a touch typing course because I'm like, I'm going to need to be typing for the rest of my life. And it was a really smart thing to do.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a much more important skill than learning to code right now. As in, it takes forever if you're typing otherwise. I think maybe in a few years time, voice to speech could be so good that actually people don't need to learn to type or interact
good
with computers.
Point, actually. Good point.
But if you spend any amount of your time at work doing emails and anything, then touch typing is such like a life hack.
It's great.
Because
it saved me countless hours being able to type. But voice is getting really good. So, but yeah, I mean, I got onto an online course for JavaScript maybe 2 years ago. And I lasted maybe 2 hours. And I thought, I could do this. I could keep doing this. But where I am in my life right now, it's not about expanding.
Yeah.
It's about tuning in.
Interacting. Yeah, definitely.
And if you want to delve into the rabbit hole that is JavaScript and coding and all these different languages, then
it is very hard to focus now because there's all these different cool things I want to do, like projects on sort of machine learning and cryptocurrency and things. And then there's so many people offering you jobs to do them as well. And so you can get paid to do like 5 million things, all of which you'd quite enjoy doing. And it's just sort of trying to like filter out the noise of like, okay, actually, what are my priorities in life right now? Okay, I think I need to do the podcast. We have to stick to that. But like everywhere else, I'm just being drawn in like a million directions. And you're like,
this is the way that the world works.
Yeah, yeah.
This is the way that Facebook works. The news feed, it goes this. Yeah. Click here. This is nature in itself. This is the way that it is, and it's up to us as tuned in people to shut out our distractions.
To recognize what's going on and
absolutely.
Be mindful of
absolutely
these things.
I've got to give a plug to my friend Jordan. He's Jordan Brown. I went to school with him. He created a feature documentary called Stare Into the Lights, My Pretties. And it's about the way that Facebook, Google, these massive, massive companies are using data to sell our future to ourselves. This is actually a concept which was quite new 5 years ago, but these days, you know, with Cambridge Analytica and the Trump campaign and all that, people are becoming very much aware of it now. But then it goes a little bit deeper, and it talks about the addictive qualities of social media. And it's a fabulously produced documentary.
That sounds really interesting.
So yeah, just Google Stare Into the Lights, My Pretties by Jordan Brown and watch that documentary. Now, because he's obviously written a documentary about how damaging social networking is, he hasn't been able to promote it on social networks, or he's chosen not to. So the only way that word gets out about how great this product is not by sharing it on Facebook, it's by me plugging it. And
cool. Well, yeah, I mean, if I can get a hold of him, I'd love to have him on the podcast maybe.
Oh, mate, I'll introduce you guys. He's a fascinating individual. He actually produced a couple of my songs years ago. He's a great musician as well. But this is an issue that I'm all for it. What he says about social is so true, but if I want to get a publishing deal, the first question these publishers ask me is what do your social networks look like? Or they want to see your likes, your shares, your follows, and all that. So I'm trying to work out how to play the game without you know, being in it but not of it. And I think that
it's really hard.
I think what Jordan's done, it's created something so fantastic that I think if it was on social, it would be shared far and wide. But it's a principle for him. It's like, I just won't go there.
Yeah.
And I really admire that. And I had this thought, maybe I'd do that as a musician. I just wouldn't play the social game. But I think I'm going to work out a way
in stealth mode, sort of.
Yeah. And I think there might be brilliant artists out there who are not active on social, who, you know, they deserve exposure.
Mm.
But, you know, bless them for not really falling for the trap of social, because it's changing the way our brains work.
Yeah.
It's
messing stuff up.
Yeah, absolutely. It's stopping us from, you know, getting ourselves involved in deep thinking. And we are multitasking more.
Reading a headline and be like, okay, cool, I know everything. I'm move on to the next place.
I find it harder to read books. Since I started using Facebook, I find it harder to engage with a big, long book. Mm. And I've realized it. It's actually happened.
Yeah.
And that's not a good thing.
Yeah, I found audiobooks quite good as well.
Yeah.
Especially when you're traveling a lot, so you can stick an audiobook on, like in all like the in-between moments whilst you're in the airport or whenever, and you can't really concentrate or do anything, but actually you can get through quite a few books, and there's some really interesting stuff. So I read like the Hans Rosling book called Factfulness, which I think you'd really like. It's all about like the world around us and politics, and the fact that like clickbait and news makes us completely have the wrong view of what's going on in the world. So you ask people, like they talk about sort of the poverty people, like they don't have any education or condoms or anything, and actually like 90% of people can read and write kind of things, and people just have no idea about the statistics and what's going on in the world. And it's a really good book. It just opens your eyes to what is actually happening and how good so many things are. And but I was able to do that with audio, just filling my spare moments of time.
Awesome.
Which is cool in many ways, but also it's kind of a bit worrying that I have to fill all my spare moments of time. Like maybe I should be more just chilled out and like be able to just have moments of nothing, and that's also where you have more of your creation. So yeah, confusing. Two recommendations of fill all your moments with books and fill your moments with doing nothing. Like meditation there.
That's my second question to you, if you don't mind. We touched a little bit about these meditation type retreats that you did, which sounded fascinating, because I think we are involved in a world where there is so much noise.
Yeah.
And I'm not Buddhist. I'm not really into Eastern religions. I'm not into them, but I'm not into them.
Yeah.
But the principles of shutting out the noise, I think, is absolutely fantastic. So tell me what that taught you going away. You were silent for a month, right?
No, 10 days.
Ten days.
Which is quite a long time. So many things. It was one of those, the first few days were really hard, and especially because you didn't feel like you were learning a lot. But after like the third day, like every day you'd have like something really profound and you'd be like, I've got it. I understand the world. The rest of this course, I'll just be like getting better at this thing. And then like the next day you'll have something else and you'll be like, whoa.
Wow.
Everything has been redefined. But yeah, some great stuff. So I guess one thing was, so I've had so many like ideas, and I'm just talking about like all these different projects that I try to do and things. And I guess because like they're my ideas, I've always felt quite a lot of ownership of them. And I kind of realized that that's really stupid, and that just sharing them and doing things with other people is more effective, and that it's more likely to get done and more fulfilling. And you don't need to be so selfish with your things, and you actually probably end up having more by sharing. Was a really kind of big realization that I realized I was kind of holding myself back and making myself unhappy about. So that was a big one. And then generally just getting stressed about anything is just stupid, and it's something that you hear all the time, like just don't get angry or get stressed. And it's easy to go, okay, yeah, it's a good idea, but to actually put that into action in certain different scenarios is just super hard. Like you feel ownership of getting angry about something, and it's just totally not worth it at all. And trying to, I've had some difficulties trying to sort of get that into other people's thinking such.
Okay.
Can I explain it? Or people like agree with me, but then like they'll still sort of like get slightly angry about stuff, and then you'll be like, oh, but it's all right, just chill. And they'll look at you and get even angry, like, okay, doesn't matter.
I get it. I think that it's very, once you understand that you can control the way you feel.
Yeah, you kind of realize how much you're damaging yourself when you are.
Yeah, you let yourself be angry, or you respond in certain ways.
And like your friends, that why do you want to be angry to your friend and drive them away and be mean when there's no need and stuff? I was trying to think of some good examples I thought of. Like, I think I'd had this great day, and like some guy had, I really like eating fruit. Mm-hmm. And each evening we were only allowed like one piece of fruit, and like we didn't actually get like a dinner or anything.
Okay.
And I turned up a bit late because didn't really feel like bothering to queue or anything, and like some guy had like two pieces of fruit. I was like, oh cool, there's lots of fruit today. Everyone else had one, and I got there, there's no fruit left, and I was like,
right,
yeah, that's a bit rude. But actually I was like, oh well, you know what, I can be happy for this guy. He looks like my flatmate's super hungry and like needs to eat like twice as many bananas as I ever do.
Yeah,
maybe he's having a good time.
Yeah,
screw it. Walked out and was like, it's a sunny day, I'm having a nice time, I'm on my meditation camp.
Yeah.
And so I was like, yeah cool, I've solved this problem. And then like in the middle of the night I was having this dream where I was with my flatmate that I'd just been thinking about, and then he like, you know, I said how much I hate waste. He'd been burning the beans on like this crazy huge gas like fire, and like I hate waste of fire, and because I'm an environmentalist and stuff, and like
yeah.
The pan was like ruined and like burnt to crap, and like the toast was all burnt. I had to throw everything away, and like I was just like, oh what are you doing, you idiot, oh my god, I can't believe it, this is why we can't have nice things, you're such a retard, oh my god. And then like I woke up, he's like, I can't do it, I'm not a nice person, like I'm making this him feel so bad about it. And I was like, the next thought was like, oh, what about other things that annoy me in the kitchen, like when idiots sort of turn on the kettle even like, and they fill it completely to the top and they want like one cup of tea, or they might even like walk away without even having anything, and they just wasted all this power, and like, oh geez, that pisses me off so much. Or like I had quite a few examples for the kitchen. It's like, wow, so much stuff stresses me out. And then like it took me a whole day to come to terms with actually why it stresses me out, and that it just doesn't matter, because I was like, well actually, here's my flatmate, I really like having time with him, and it's his problem if he burned the beans. It was a mistake, he didn't mean to do it, obviously. Why am I getting angry about something that he did by accident? Like, it's just stupid.
Yeah.
And why am I then making him feel like a dick and like causing frustration in the relationship when there's no need? I can just be like, oh babe, this is the problem, well let's just like make some more bread, it doesn't matter. And then like, okay, so some Airbnb guest comes and boils my kettle, like, and what is the problem if they don't use the whole kettle's worth of thing? As in, so many people retardedly fill kettles to too much, and like it happens across the whole world every single second, and I don't spend every single second of the day having a crisis.
That's right.
But when one kettle in my kitchen does that, I have a crisis and I get pissed off at the person that I'm spending time with.
Yeah.
Why? It is so ridiculous. It's like, it makes no sense at all. And if anything, I should be grateful because I have a green energy tariff that's unlimited, so at least like it's going to green energy rather than somewhere else.
Uh-huh.
And it's my chance to explain to them the law of thermodynamics and how much energy they're wasting and potentially to save from things, as in they were doing it before. Instead of getting pissed off, I can actually be grateful for the opportunity to be like a good person about it.
And it's your choice. The thing I'm out of control of the situation. You're actually not.
Yeah.
Because all you're doing is going, looking at it from a different angle and
definitely
choosing to respond in a different way.
Yeah. So I think that was like yeah, the key from meditation was to sort of to not be so much in like just your focused closed view of the world, and to be much more open-minded about like everyone's view and everyone's angle. So yeah, there's a good example, I think, analogy of if you ask someone to draw an elephant, but you only give them like a keyhole to look through, you'll get like someone will draw a tail, someone will draw like a toe. And then if you stick them together, you have no idea what an elephant really looks like. And that's like what you get when you only look from your perspectives directly. But if you sort of open up what you see, you can actually see the whole elephant for what it really is.
Yeah.
Which is like whatever the problem is you're addressing. If you think of that as the elephant, if you only think of your view, you're only ever going to get like a very weird opinion of it.
Yeah.
So I think I'm going to have to do a whole podcast about it.
Definitely. Yeah, what, you've not done one on the meditation?
No.
Oh, you're kidding me, mate. That's fascinating stuff.
It's on the roadmap, don't worry.
Definitely, mate. Definitely.
I've had a busy year.
Yeah. That's good to be busy.
Cool. But anyway, we are pretty much out of time.
Great.
One thing I do ask people to do you have any favorite books?
Yeah, there's a book called The War of Art by Stephen Pressfield, which is a fabulous book. It's the first one that comes to mind.
Okay, cool.
It's really good for creatives. It's about writer's block, and it's about seeing your art as, you know, professional. It's not just something you just kind of, you know, muck around with. It's something that you have a purpose with. And yeah, great book, The War of Art, Stephen Pressfield.
Cool. All right. And then anyone wants to like contact you on Twitter or something?
Yeah, Steve Kopandy, Kopandy, or just find me at originalsongwriter.com.
Cool.
And all my links to social are there. And love to hear from you. Please, it would really help me if you subscribed to my YouTube channel, followed me on Spotify, because the more subscribers and followers I have, apparently the more successful I am.
Yeah, you me know? Too.
Please don't do that if you're not into my stuff. If you like my music, please follow me. That'd be great.
Cool. All right. Thanks so much. And that's the end of the podcast.